You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We've got a ton of stuff to get to. We're running the gauntlet on the program today. Steve Merrill's going to hop up in it. We're going to talk some Major League Baseball with Steve. We'll talk some NASCAR as they go to Kentucky this weekend. The Raging Redhead Cam Stewart will join us. And the kid, not so hot tonight. The kid is full of rage this afternoon. As the Raging Redhead, I think he wants to vent some rage after the Arizona Diamondback collapse last night against the Los Angeles Dodgers. A special run for the LA Dodgers right now. And in fact, we have two of the hotter teams in Major League Baseball squaring off this evening at Chavez Ravine. Yet, let me tell you, don't wear red tonight, all right? Don't wear red, but we'll get to that a little bit later on in the program. All right, we're all about the blue today, man. We're talking Royals, we're talking Dodgers, and we're talking Dallas Cowboys as well. Our team-by-team previews continue, and hard to believe, man, but we're already through the AFC right now. So we begin with the NFC, and we begin with the Dallas Cowboys on today's program. So like I said, we got a ton of stuff going on, man. It's UFC Fight Week. We've got a UFC card tonight. We've got a UFC card tomorrow as well. We've got a Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather press conference tour that's set to begin next week that no doubt will be more entertaining than the actual fight will be. So why not start off with Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor? And I got to tell you what, it's almost like me doing these Colin Kaepernick opinion vids. I don't like doing it. I don't really want to talk about this. And am I the only one that gets the feeling that this Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight is sort of like, you know, we've all said stupid things when we're drunk. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. We should do this. We should do that. It's almost like they were drunk, and now they're sober, and it's like, ooh, all right, well, we already told the world we're doing this, so we better do it right now. Now, listen, Conor McGregor is a great smack talker. This is what he does. All right, this is what he does. Now, it's easy just to run your mouth and insult your opponent. A lot of fighters do that. They don't really separate themselves from the pack by doing that. But Conor McGregor has been able to manipulate his opponents in the UFC. Jose Aldo, normally a very patient fighter. Jose Aldo ran in there because he was so upset about all the stuff that McGregor stated. We can go down the list. There's a ton of dudes who have fallen for this trap with Conor McGregor. Floyd Mayweather's not going to fall for this stuff. And, you know, don't be surprised. Conor's going to raise it up a notch, right? You know, you can't knock anybody out. The last person you knocked out was your wife. You've gone to jail. You know, he's going to go on. I wouldn't be surprised if he sort of walks that line of sort of, you know, racial baiting, so to speak. Conor needs to sell this thing because anybody that's seen Conor McGregor's workout videos for this fight damn well knows this isn't a fight. This is a sham, all right? This is a freaking sham, man. You want to fight? Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar is more of a fight, and that's rigged, okay? That's fake, and that's like more of a fight than what this fight actually is. Now, I'm going to be watching a fight, but whatever, man. I watch Australian women's netball at 5 in the morning. What I watch is not a good barometer here. But boxing fans aren't into this. Boxing fans don't even like Floyd Mayweather to begin with. Boxing fans know this is a sham. They don't want to let Conor McGregor make money off of this. So boxing fans aren't ordering this. UFC fans are cheap and just steal the product anyways. They're not ordering this. UFC fans will watch it, but they're going to be streaming it for free online. It'll be the first time that Dana is going to be laughing about that. And I actually secretly believe that Dana White secretly believes that this is going to tank. He said before, you know, this isn't a slam dunk. You never really know. And it's a great thing for Dana. He's not going to say this publicly. Dana's getting a cut. You know, he's getting a piece of Conor's cut. He's under contract to Dana White, property of the UFC, so to speak. But in all actuality, the UFC's not promoting this fight. They have nothing to do with it, all right? They're not on the poster. They're not putting together this promotional tour. They have absolutely nothing to do with this fight. So if it tanks, you know, Dana White can say after, well, you know what, maybe if we would have had something to do with it, we could have sold it a hell of a lot better. Not to mention, Conor McGregor, his ego is already out of control, all right? Next to Donald Trump, who has a bigger ego in the world right now besides Conor McGregor? And now you're about to hand this dude $100 million for not being able to box. So his ego and his richdomness is already going to go through the freaking roof. And I don't know if richdomness is a word, but it should be. It's going to go through the roof, all right? It's better for Dana if the pay-per-views are bad, if Conor McGregor gets like thoroughly embarrassed by Floyd Mayweather, and he has to sort of come back to the UFC. You know, but if he even looks half-assed good, his ego's going to go through the freaking roof like it already is. But I tell you what, he's not going to look good. And you want the biggest lock of the night, besides Floyd winning, obviously, is there's a lot of sports books are actually posting a prop over under 4.5 million pay-per-view hits. Over under 4.5 million pay-per-views. I'll tell you what, there'll be 4.5 million people watching online. You guys will be lucky to get past 2 million. And I'll be the only one that's going to say this right now because everybody's going to suck up to this and blah, 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 and all that other crap that the mainstream jackals do. But I'll be the only one that's going to tell you right now. The sportsbook set this at 4.5 million because that's what they got for Pacquiao and Mayweather. That was different, all right? I'd be amazed if they got past 2 million. And I think it's a pretty bold prediction because I'm going to like less than half of what they're expecting. Another thing is, too, we're talking to people in Vegas. There's no buzz around this fight. The only buzz around this fight is going to be the drunken Irishmen that go to Vegas. So you better hope that you can sell like 18,000 tickets to some very naive Irishmen that want to get fleeced in Las Vegas in late August. Because no common dude is paying $1,500 to sit in the last row for this sham, okay? Better off going to WrestleMania. No one's paying $1,500. Like the average guy, I'm an average guy. You know, I told people I'd pay $200, maybe. Maybe. If I'm in a good mood and I'm not watching the Rice-Stanford game, which I will be. So, you know, you're not getting $1,500 from the casual guy. And I don't know if you know this about rich people with money. They don't like looking like losers sitting in the last row. You're going to have some like D-list celebrities there and a bunch of Irishmen. When it's all said and done, I think that when they're counting the money for this fight, Floyd and Connor, they're going to be a lot like the fans that paid for the fight. Disappointed. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues.
Hey, fantasy nerds, here's a question for you. What do mozzarella sticks and the Fantasy Sports Radio Network have in common? They're both awesome apps. But seriously, download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app right now and get all your favorite shows and fantasy advice at the touch of a tiny icon on your screen. Snapchat and Instagram aren't going to help you win a fantasy football title, but the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app will. So go get it now on Google Play and iTunes.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, we've got the Raging Redhead. Cam Stewart's going to join us in studio. And don't forget, me and Cam are on weeknights at 8 o'clock on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. 8 o'clock Eastern. It's free, you cheap son of a bitches. It's free. All right, so download the app like the kids do. Or go to fantasysportsnetwork.com/radio. Great times last night. I got worked up about this all-star voting stuff. And I would have actually done a rage about this to start the show, but I don't like to repeat myself too much. Now, I do a lot of shows, but I like to come up with new material. But is the voting over yet? Is this, you know, is the begging over yet? Bunch of Major League Baseball players, like with tin cups, please give me your all-star vote. I charge $200 for an autograph, and I wouldn't cross the street to piss on you if you were on fire, but please give me the all-star vote. I need it for my bonus. I got to buy a Ferrari, man. Got to buy a Ferrari. Chris Bosh, I remember. Oh, please, Toronto, I love it here so much. It means so much to me if you can support me for the all-star game. And then when he leaves to Miami, I'm so glad to be out of Toronto. There's so many immigrants there, and it smelt funny. F you, Chris Bosh. Steve Merrill joins us. What's up, Steve?
What's going on, Gabe?
All right. I'm fired up about that. You know, I like the good old days, man. It was like the Chads in fixed elections. You know, my all-star votes, I used to punch the vote in, you know, at the baseball game on the little cards with the little ballot, and I took it seriously. You know, even as a 10-year-old, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to vote for Chris Spire starting shortstop for the Expos to be in the All-Star game. I'm like, no, Dave Concepcion is the best shortstop. So I'll vote for him. Now these All-Star games, you got a bunch of jackal keyboard warriors, and you can vote 85,000 times. I hate it. It sucks.
No, I remember the good old days with the punch-out ballots. I still even got some in my collection from the 80s. You know, they're great, and I got excited about it as well. And plus, in the back in the day, we didn't have cable TV, so the only time we got to see a lot of these players was in the All-Star game. You know, you couldn't see players from some of the teams on the West Coast when you're on the East Coast.
No interleague play in those days either.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. So, I mean, I always got really excited about it. You know, I was a huge baseball card collector, and we didn't have, you know, the MLB ticket back then. And it's funny, I cared more about it then when I was 10 years old than I do now.
You know, it's interesting, actually, that you say that. I wonder how much those are worth, because a lot of people have been talking about
they're not worth much at all. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, I'd say they're probably worth about, I don't know, 1 cent each, maybe?
You talk about the baseball cards or the ballots?
The ballots.
Oh, the ballots might be worth something because there's not as many of those. The baseball cards I know aren't worth anything because everybody and their brother has 10 of them.
Yeah, it depends. We talked memorabilia last night on the radio show, actually. I actually broke an autographed Wayne Gretzky hockey stick that turns out that's worth like $5,000, but that's another story. yeah, it is what it is. I threw it in a snowbank, too, even worse. Like, I smashed it playing hockey. I was like, stupid Titan stick, and I threw it in the snow. And I was, you know, years later, I'm like, you know, I just realized I threw a Wayne Gretzky stick in the snow. Like, I knew I did it at the time, but I was a dumb kid. I thought I'd get another one. Like, my uncle was on the team with them, so I didn't really know the worth. Plus, Wayne Gretzky was only 18 at the time. We knew he was going to be good, but no one knew his stupid stick would be worth $4,000 18 years later. All right, anyways, Dave, Major League Baseball Power Poll. We didn't get to do it earlier in the week, but Dodgers atop the board and with good reason. You know, last night, another epic comeback for the Dodgers. There's something special going on in L.A. this year.
Yeah, and of course, I had the under in that game. That worked out real well.
Yeah, so did I. It sucked.
Just ridiculous. And it was funny, when I was handicapping that game, I really liked the starting pitching matchup, and that played out to a T. I mean, what was it, 1-1 in the eighth inning, under 7.5. Dodgers score 4 in the bottom of the ninth to win 5-4. The thing is, one thing that jumped out at me, and I was thinking of you actually, Gabe, as I was handicapping that game, because the Dodgers' offense the previous three games or so had been just ice cold. And we always talk about offensive momentum, you know, for good and bad. And the Dodgers, a couple weeks ago when they moved to number one in my power rankings, were averaging over 6 runs a game for a week and a half. And going into last night, they'd averaged about, you know, less than 3 runs a game for several games. So we'll see if that's the turning point. You know, obviously they took advantage of an Arizona bullpen that struggled last night, but wouldn't be surprised to see the Dodgers going a little bit of an offensive role now. That might be the catalyst that kickstarts it.
Well, tonight they host the Kansas City Royals, two of the hottest teams in Major League Baseball. I've been playing the Royals on a daily basis for the most part. So it's a battle of blue bloods, literally and figuratively. Royals and Dodgers here this evening. Dodgers are minus 220. Jason Hamill on the hill for the Royals. Maeda on the hill for the Dodgers. You know, the Royals are 22 and 10 in their last 32 baseball games. They're 18-6 in their last 24. They're 6-1 in their last 7. But when you look at both these baseball teams, these are the two pitchers that are very hittable. So like you said, we could have some runs put up on the board tonight.
Well, the thing about Kansas City is they were just terrible to start the first couple months of the season. Their bullpen, which had been such a strength for several years, was really bad. Their offense was terrible. But they've never been a great offensive team, even when they won the World Series a couple years ago. What's changed here in the past month or so during that hot streak that you referenced is the offense is hitting the ball now. They've been putting up some runs. So the real question is, do the Dodgers carry over that momentum from yesterday? Because they were not in good offensive form going into last night's game, and it really didn't look too good for most of the game for them until the ninth inning. But, yeah, I think the over is probably the way to play this. These are two teams that have definitely been hitting the ball pretty well overall for the past month.
And you have to also consider, I don't know how much of a factor it is, but a little bit, Steve. It's a little bit of a letdown right now for the Dodgers. You know, they've been playing the Rockies. They've been playing the D-backs. They hate the D-backs. The D-backs are only a couple of games back. Now, they have the momentum. Like, and obviously, the Dodgers going to the park. Everything's working for them every day. I mean, they're like 22-2 or something in their last 24 games. But I'm just stating, It's not a division game. I mean, they were all hyped up to play Colorado. They beat the crap out of them. They were hyped up to beat Arizona. They sweep them as well. So it's just not the same edge tonight against the Kansas City Royal team that they frankly don't play that often, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I thought you were going to say a letdown because of the way they won last night.
No,
if anything,
no.
I think that actually could be momentum from that win. But I think you do bring up a good point about the recent schedule. Had the Rockies in Arizona at home, and then they had L.A. Angels home and away for four games.
Yeah, freeway series, which is a big series for them.
So even San Diego for three, you know, still a divisional in-state team, and they did lose one of those three on the road at San Diego. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. A lot of times we see teams carry momentum into that first game. You know, we talk about those Sunday night games and teams have to travel on Monday. They sometimes perform well still, and then we see them really struggle on Tuesday. So if the Dodgers do okay tonight, hey, maybe fade them tomorrow on Saturday. We'll have McCarthy and Kennedy on the mound. That might even be the better spot to fade the L.A. Dodgers.
You know what, Steve? I think we're overanalyzing this. What can we say? Both teams are smoking hot. You know what I mean? Like, they're both hot. They're both coming in here. They're both winning every night. A team that's not hot, the Colorado Rockies. And you and I have been talking about this team all year. But I remember when it was like last Monday. And we're like, yeah, all right, they got swept, but it was against the Dodgers. Okay, and they've lost four in a row, but it was against them. Then it was like, well, they've lost five in a row and six in a row, but it was against the Dodgers and the D-backs. But this thing has grown, all right? It's grown exponentially into like a tire fire for these guys. What seemed like a harmless, okay, no bad, you know, no harm. We got swept by the Dodgers. It's okay. Has turned into a disaster. 2-13 in the last 15 games now.
Yeah, and look, Kansas City was almost dead last in my power rankings a couple months ago, and I kept saying, you know, I know they're not the worst team in the league, but that's how they're playing now, and it's not a surprise that they're moving up rapidly, as we just talked about. Vice versa, the Colorado Rockies, as you know, I got them as high as, I think, number two a couple weeks ago, and we even said that, you know, theoretically they were playing as well as anybody in the league, but you and I both just didn't think they were the real deal. And as some coaches have said, they're who we thought they were, you know, and that's what it's turning out now, and this is a team that's in a free fall. I sound like a broken record, but I always talk about momentum, both good and bad. You have 162 baseball games. You can't try to catch a falling knife, and the Rockies have not bottomed out yet, so I wouldn't touch them until they do.
See, that's the thing. They got Derek Holland tonight. They're going up against Derek Holland. Derek Holland's been a train wreck. He's a gas cat. But with the Rockies, it's not like they're losing close games, or it's not like, well, we're getting good pitching, and, you know, we left the bases loaded, or we're just not getting good pitching right now. Like, nothing is working for the Rockies right now. Like, during the last 15 games, they're hitting .226 on offense. Their team ERA is over 7 right now. And what seemed insurmountable, it seemed like a fait accompli, even as recently as last week, that all three playoff teams, that the two wild cards were going to come out of that division. That it was going to be, you know, L.A., Arizona, and Colorado in the playoffs in the National League. You know, it's down to 6.5 right now. And it's interesting, Steve, because the Cubs still haven't flicked that switch. The Brewers aren't letting up, which is really surprising. And, you know, now the Cubs are 6.5 back of this wild card, which could be Colorado. Things are going to get pretty interesting. It's going to be a pretty crazy September this year. There's no automatics.
Yeah, and look, we have the All-Star break in three games. You know, the All-Star break comes after this weekend's three-game series. And I expect a team like the Cubs that you just mentioned to kind of flip that switch. They have too much talent and too much veteran pedigree to not turn it on when it counts, you know, in the second half of July and August. Colorado, meanwhile, is not that type of team. So it's going to be very interesting to see if the Rockies can regroup. You know, we have a longer All-Star break than before. You know, they don't play again until next Friday. That could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. You know, last year the Giants were they passed the Cubs for a couple weeks heading into the break. They were the only team to be number one other than the Cubs last year in my power rankings. And they were almost dead last a few weeks ago in my power rankings this year. So the Giants have been terrible since last year's All-Star break and have never turned it around. We'll see if the Cubs can kind of reverse that. We'll see if the Rockies can reverse it. But it's going to be very telling on the next couple of weeks which teams turn it on and which ones don't.
You know when reality really kicks in for real? So there's a couple of different stages. And the Bucks keep passing these tests. The Brewers, Milwaukee. The Brewers keep passing the test in the sense that a good first month, all right? A lot of teams have a good first month. Ooh, good second month, okay. Yeah, let's see how you're doing at the end of June, after 3 months. Oh, wow, you're still winning. And then you know when it kicks in, Steve, and I used to see this with the Expos when I cover them. because the Expos, you know, they had no budget, etc. So they were upstarts, and a couple of times they'd be playing well. August is when it gets real. That's when the games start to count and guys start to look at the calendar and realize, man, if we actually don't screw this up, we can actually win this division. We can go to the playoffs. Reality kicks in, and then, of course, September 1st again. So I'm intrigued to see what happens to Milwaukee when we get there, but they're not letting up. All right, we got the Astros and the Jays tonight. Speaking of letting up, the Jays season was falling apart. But, you know, just when it appeared they're going to be heading into the All-Star break and maybe break everything up, because they're so far out, they've won three in a row right now. We'll see if they can keep this going. Very streaky team, the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and, you know, Toronto's been like that for several years now. We talk about, you know, slow starts. Remember 2 years ago, after those first 2 months, they were below 500 in 2016, or 2015, rather, and they had the best record in baseball then over the final 4 to 5 months of the season. Last year, they did a similar thing. They started off pretty slow in April, turned things on after the middle of May. They haven't been able to do so yet this year, but I'm not writing them off yet, because we've seen them do it 2 years in a row where they've started slow and then turned it on. Now, it's obviously a little later in the season now. It's almost the midway point of July. But I think Toronto still is a team, kind of like the Cubs, could turn it around and play a lot better in the second half than they've been playing. So I'm not ready to write them off yet, but it's getting pretty close.
I tell you this, Steve, they've saved themselves, because it was an embarrassing homestand that they were on. The Red Sox swept them. They were getting drilled in every game. The Jays players even said they were humiliated. I think they went 1-9 at home on a 10-game stand. It was a low point for them, but they were 8 games under 500, and it's like, all right, they're going to New York. This could get really ugly. They're 10.5 out already of first place, but they find a way to win 2 games. And then they beat Houston last night. So suddenly, you know, instead of being 8 games under 500, you're 5 games under 500. You got 3 more going into the weekend. Like you said, you can salvage this. If you're only 2-3 games under 500 at the All-Star break, you can say, hey, we're only a 10-2 run away from getting back in this right now.
And Houston's an interesting team, Gabe. Look at the AL West. The Astros are still 15.5 games above the Angels. There's no other team in that division with a winning record right now. Texas and Anaheim are below 500. Houston is 58-28. They're 30 games above 500. So at what point do they start to have a little bit of complacency? You know, the Nationals are 8.5 up in the NL East. Obviously, we could see that from them as well. I still think they're going to make a move and get a big-time closer. They have so much offensive talent and minor league talent that the Nationals, I still think, are worth a look in the future odds. Now, the current team right now could not win with that bullpen. I think they'll make a move. Houston, you know, actually has had some injuries, and they've still been winning, and they're 15.5 up, so they're going to be able to rest some of those guys come September. And I think, you know, having a big lead right now really helps you come playoff time, because you don't have to play hard every single day.
Yeah, but it's hard to flip the switch, you know, after as well. And you get these teams that are playing meaningful baseball down the stretch, and they always seem to have that momentum. You're right about the Astros, and I thought about that with the Nationals last night. They lose to the Braves, and it's like, yes, so what? Like, if you're the Nationals, right? Like, what are you playing for? It's hard to stay focused and motivated every night. But Houston's just running away with everything, where they're going to have home field. If you look, the Dodgers and the Nationals are actually competing for home field. So if I was the Nationals, you know, that's what I'd have my eyes on. And as far as quickly with the Jays tonight, it's interesting. Morton and Sanchez, two pitchers, both returning from the DL tonight, Steve. You don't often see that.
Yeah, and it's something to be very careful with them. Obviously, your first thought is maybe the over, and I don't think either will go very far. And by the way, Gabe, real quick, Houston Astros, one of the most profitable teams in baseball this year against the money line. They're the most profitable. The next three most profitable teams are Dodgers, Diamondbacks, and Rockies still, all from the NL West. It's kind of crazy how that works.
Yeah, they're giving it back a lot, the Rockies, though.
Actually, the Rockies are behind the Brewers, and I stand corrected. Rockies are now fifth. Milwaukee's past them.
Yeah, and the Giants are like big, big money burners. Like biggest
right,
money
in
burner
the same
team.
Division. Yeah, you got to have it that way. If you have three of the top five in the division, you got to have the worst also in the division with the Giants.
All right, let's go to Rand Paul country Steve, Kentucky, NASCAR. Mile and a half tracks. They laid new pavement down last year. The drivers seem to like this track. They like it. It's fast. Crazy year, man. 11 drivers have won in the 17 races. Joe Gibbs Racing still has not won. They're not one of them. Although I think this is the week. We got to hop on this bandwagon, but we'll get to that in a second. But it's interesting here, Steve. The last 6 races here at Kentucky, one driver has led at least 118 laps. And also, that driver has always been in the top 10. So, you know, we talk about starting position often, meaningful, on road courses or meaningful at certain tracks per se. But generally, we don't focus on it too much on the mile and a half, et cetera, the 2 miles, Steve. But, there is something here that the last six times, the winner was in the top 10 and the winner had 118 laps.
Yeah, this is about as good of a chance for a Gibbs racer to win as we're going to see all season. The best average driver rating in recent years has been Kyle Busch. Matt Kenseth is actually the third or fourth best average driver here. And Denny Hamlin, obviously capable as well. So, I mean, Kyle Busch is going to be the favorite. Keselowski's been dominant here as well. Martin Truex Jr. is somewhat of a Gibbs driver, even though he has several wins this year. He's done well here also. By the way, Jamie McMurray, fastest so far in today's first practice. Don't read too much into that because there may be in some qualifying trim there because they haven't qualified yet. But McMurray is quietly having a really nice season. And this is a guy that finished seventh last year, and he finished second back in 2013 at Kentucky. So we'll have to see how he does on the second and third practices on Saturday or on tomorrow and later today.
So you mentioned Keselowski. He's in the 5-1 range, pretty low odds for a mile and a half track. But the fact of the matter is, the guy's got a 500 winning percentage here.
They've raced here six times.
Three of the last five. You're right. Three of the last six overall as well. Six races. He loves this place. He's also got five top tens here. He's got an average finish of 8.2. It's hard not to bet him. The odds are low. You mentioned Truex Jr. He won at Vegas. He won at Kansas. The guy just, he led the most laps at Kansas and Vegas. He's a mile and a half stud and king. But the guy that I'm picking to win this race, and Joe Gibbs, is going to get into the winner's circle for the first time this year. Kyle Busch, two-time winner here, never finished worse than 12th place. I'm calling it. Kyle Busch and JGR finally get it done.
How about this, though, Gabe? They've been on 5 mile-and-a-half tracks this year, and that's Atlanta, Vegas, Texas, Kansas, and Charlotte. Keselowski's been first, fifth, sixth, second, and then 39. So he's been top six in four of the five. Truex Jr. has been first and has won two of them. He's been third and eight in the other. So he's been top eight in all five, including top three in three of the five. Kyle Busch, 16th, 22nd, 15th, but then fifth and second in the last two. So which Kyle Busch shows up? And that's exactly why Gibbs doesn't have a win yet this year. He's been top five the last two, but he wasn't even top 16 in the other three. So it's been very inconsistent this year for Gibbs Racing.
Yeah, Matt Kenseth, another Gibbs guy. Kenseth, 18-1. Great average finish here. Average finish of 5.2. He won here in 2013. Kyle Larson, interestingly enough, never finished higher than 19th on this track. Chase Elliott, not a lot of experience here. He's in the 12-1 range. And, I don't see a long shot this week, Steve. I think one of the aforementioned guys that we just talked about are going to win. And the fact of the matter is, we talked about Keselowski winning three of the last six times here. But Brad Keselowski, Kyle Busch, or Matt Kenseth have won all last six times here. Those three guys.
Yeah, and Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott have been much, much better this year on the mile and a halves than they had been in recent years. So I kind of throw out those past Kentucky numbers. Kyle Larson's been second place in three of the five races this year on miles and a half. He was third fastest in the practice session one. And Elliott's been the same way, consistently top 10, and he was ninth fastest. But you're right, they've never finished better than 19th. In fact, their four races combined, they've been 31st or worse in three of the four on this racetrack.
Interesting. Seems like experience is a key here. Keselowski, Busch, and Kenseth have won the last six times here. That's my pick. Kyle Busch. It's only plus 500, but hey, it is what it is, guys. Always a pleasure, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
Steve Merrill with us. Always a pleasure kicking it with Steve, and it's always a pleasure breaking it down with the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart, coming up next.
Ezekiel Elliott, Carl Anthony Towns, Corey Seager. Those are the rookies of the year, much like the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The fastest growing fantasy sports network on radio is completely free, 24/7. Listen to us live at fntsy.com/radio or download the app right now in the Google Play Store or on iTunes.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morency. Cam is choking here. What's going on, Cam?
How are you doing, Gabe?
You know what, Cam? Normally you would sing here, come out with some jokes, but some days it's just harder to fake it, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not one to fake it. I'm not going to lie to you. Major financial crisis last night. You know what the worst is? When we were doing Red Heat and Rage, I was feeling pretty good about myself. I had a nice afternoon roll. And this is the thing about when you're in the gambling business, right? Ooh, big 4-0 afternoon, feeling good about myself. I'm hot. I'm just going to ride out the rest of the night. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Hey, the best was Arizona, though. Nice four. Hey, Fernando Rodney, you're a great closer. There's one for you. Put it to the sky, you jerk. Hey, go take up archery because you suck as a closer. 5.5 ERA. Oh, don't know what the best is? Know what the best thing about you is? You didn't get one out. 4 walks. What a joke.
It's
gas can. You talk about Bob Wickman. You used to hate that guy. Fernando Rodney shouldn't be closing in any team. I wouldn't let him close a T-ball team.
Steve Merrill joined us. And,
guy sucks.
He was crying. Who, Merrill? He's a good guy.
Oh, Merrill's amazing. Sorry, I'm just... Fernando Rodney. And the hat sideways. Oh, I get it, buddy. I get it. Oh, yeah, you're a big gangster on the hill, eh? This guy's such an idiot.
I had the under in that game.
Oh, yeah, so you got screwed, too.
Yeah,
welcome to our world.
I knew
world,
it was going to happen. I'm like, yeah, Dodgers are about to
And here's
back.
The thing. You're a manager of a baseball team, so the guy walks one guy, walks another guy. Like, after the second walk, you might want to take the guy out because he doesn't have it. Don't you know what Fernando Rodney is? He's a gas can. You can't let him walk four guys. What a joke.
It was a night of bad beats last night as the Montreal Alouette defense played their hearts out.
They did.
Made play after play after play against the BC Lions. Surprisingly enough, the offense came alive late.
Mm-hmm.
Darian Durant moved the Alouettes down the field, tied the football game with a late dramatic touchdown with about 4 minutes left to tie the football game at 16. Now, I had 3 points. A lot of people got the three and a half.
Yep.
I only had three, and it was at the point where I was willing to lose by three.
Yeah,
I was like, all right, we're tied. If BC goes down the field and kicks a field goal, I can live with that. All right, it sucks, but I'll live with it. And, of course, no, BC marches down the field easily.
Touchdown.
Like Fernando Rodney was playing linebacker or DP. And, they scored, took about 5 plays?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, for the record, too, a CFL field is actually 385 yards long. All right? It's not easy to go down the field in, 6 plays.
They made it look real.
Yeah, it was, 6 90-yard plays in a row, and then they got to the 30-yard line. But in all honesty, it was, chunk, 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 chunk. And I'm like, all right, just hold them to a field goal. Touchdown.
Yep.
And then it was I know the Alouettes aren't going to come back and tie this game, but... The degenerate and the loser in me thinks we got a shot.
Of course we do.
It's like Gil in The Simpsons, you know? As long as there's a tomorrow on the calendar, we got a chance.
I got a sail in me.
You know, it's like Homer. It's still good. It's still good. It's still good.
What, the sandwich?
The pig's flying away.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Still good. It's still good. And Bart tells him it's not good.
It's not
good. So last night I'm like, maybe they can shock us. Maybe the Alouettes can come back and march the ball down the field. They do. All the way to the 50-yard line. And I'm like, wow, man, they're actually moving the ball. And then for one reason or another, Darian Durant just decides to throw the stupidest interception.
Oh, yeah, that was a brutal throw.
It's it makes Ryan Fitzpatrick look like Aaron Rodgers. Astros and Jays tonight. That was one game you got, you were on the right side.
You know what it was, though, Gabe? It's funny. We finished Red Heat and Rage yesterday, and I'm like, you know, it's a good night. I do a great show with Morency. We're on fire. We do a good radio show, and I see Sean and Vartanian sitting there at the bar, and I just see the golden brown lager just sitting there as it's glistening off the glass. I go, you know what I deserve? I deserve a cold one after the show, because it's been one of those. The minute I sat down, my world collapsed. I lost everything from that point. It's just one of those things. I should have gone home.
Must be nice to have the money that Sean and Vartanian have.
Spending
Thursday nights lounging with hot chicks at trendy, upscale neighborhood bars.
They were 6 kokanees deep before I even, hit the seat. Anyway.
Meanwhile, I'm slaving away. Sports Rage Premium.
That's the best. Hey, Morency, what are you doing? We leave the show at 9 o'clock. Because I got another radio show. This guy's an android. He's not even human. I don't know, Morency, if we cut you open, I think oil comes out, not blood. Anyway, what are we talking, Astros and Jays?
Yeah, are you going back to the well tonight?
No. I think Charlie Morton. Isn't he Charlie the Sun-Kissed
Tuna? I
hate
to say this, Cam, but Morton. Whoever you take tonight in this game is going to lose.
Okay.
I know.
That's good.
I know.
Thanks.
No, that's
true.
Only because you're a Jays fan.
Kind of.
What do you mean, kind of?
Yeah, I cheer for them, but not really, not all the time. They've cost me a lot of money. I'm actually very angry at them.
I had them last night, though.
Are you going to the game tomorrow?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I am going to the game tomorrow. I am going to the game tomorrow.
Casual kind of fans don't go to games, all right?
It's a family outing. I haven't seen my brother and his kids in like 2 years. That's why I'm going to the game because
it's been a long time since Cam's been to a Jays game. When was the last Jays game you were at, Cam?
A couple weeks ago when Tampa Bay was in town. I saw Faria.
The last
home stand.
Oh,
the last home stand. I don't like those $17 beers. I don't know. This is a tough game tonight. Morton and Sanchez.
You don't like the beer. You don't like the team.
No.
But you seem to go to the games a lot and drink a lot of beers there.
I do. That's when I have money. Yeah, both guys coming off the DL right now, Morton and Sanchez. This is a dog's breakfast anyway. You want to look
no,
at it.
Cameron. I don't say you're going to lose because you
No, I'm on tilt.
Deals. Yeah. You take the Jays. And the Astros are going to win 6-2. You're going to be like, I knew the Jays couldn't win four in a row.
Yep.
It's impossible. And then you're like, no, the smart play is to take the Astros. They're way better. And then it's going to be, Batista hits a three-run shot.
Correct.
You're going to be like, I can't believe I bet against the Jays.
Hey, you're absolutely right. It's a no-win situation.
Yeah, you can't win.
We should probably pass with this
game. You
know
what we got to do? This is like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. We got to get a lifeline and call Vizine Vince right now.
Yeah, well.
Like, he's the deciding factor, but I'll tell you right
he's
now,
on
Vince
the Jays.
Likes the Jays.
Of course he does. He likes the Jays every night. He likes the Jays every night.
Okay. I don't like, it's funny. I like betting on baseball totals.
Yeah.
I like betting on football totals, hockey totals, every other total. But I'm not a big fan of baseball totals, actually, Kev.
Because when you think it's going under, it goes over.
That's what I'm saying.
Do the opposite.
Abeldo Jimenez, the guy's a gas can, and the guy will throw a no-hitter. So I'm just going to say the White Sox are on a 6-0 overrun right now. They're in Colorado. The total's 11.5. Derek Holland, his last 8 starts, Cam, have gone over the number. The Sox have given up 5 runs or more in 5 of their last 6 games and have actually scored 5 or more in 4 of their last 5. Hey.
This game's got to go over.
All the math adds up to go over. So, in other words, going to be 2-1 final score.
Yeah, exactly. With Holland and Marquez there, we could have like 21 combined runs. I actually lean to the over in this game.
What about the Royals tonight and the Dodgers?
The thing is, Gabe, I love dogs. You know me. I'm the dog catcher. But tonight, I don't think the way the Dodgers are winning games, you don't mess with a team like that. It's kind of like that guy at the casino. I told you, the drunk Scottish guy. It didn't matter what he did. He didn't even know how to play blackjack. It's always coming up him. That's the thing. 6 hands in a row, 7 hands in a row. You just ride out the streak because the Dodgers are too hot. Royals are playing great baseball, but I don't know, man. I think the Dodgers are going to get it done. It's a stay-away game for me.
You know, it's funny. I'm a Dodger fan, and I was on the Dodgers last night, but I was also on the under, unfortunately. But I think the Royals are actually the play tonight.
I would lean Royals because they're at plus 180. The pitching matchup.
Here's something really interesting. Now, the Dodgers and the Royals, they have very similar uniforms, right? They sort of look the same. They both wear blue. Yeah. I used to live in Los Angeles and, of course, in the old gang wars. Now, the Bloods and the Crips still exist. Yet, you have to be careful what you wear in L.A. and certain parts of town. The only thing that you can really wear blue everywhere is the Dodgers. They won't shoot you for that because the Crips, like, he's just a Dodger fan.
Yeah.
He's not in the Crips, but it's going to be interesting tonight. I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of gangbangers at this game, all right? The Kansas City Royals don't go to L.A., like ever type of deal. And every Crip in the city wears a Kansas City Royal hat. So for those of you in Iowa right now that aren't aware of that, that's right. Do we have a Royal hat up here? No, of course we don't.
No, we don't.
I like the bomb. Every Crip wears a Royal hat.
Yep.
KC, Killer Crip. Oh. It's blue, and it says KC, Killer Crip. When I moved to L.A., I was like, why? I thought they would wear Dodger hats. They all wear Royal hats.
They're really?
Like, yeah, KC Killer Crip.
I didn't have a clue.
See, you just learned a lesson in L.A. gang warfare.
Bombers in the over. The
Bombers
CFL.
In the over. Upset special
Tease
tonight.
Too.
I like
yep.
it. We got to get out of here. More of Cam's misery tonight at 8 o'clock on the radio. Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Quarterback to receiver hookups. Running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. And it's power-packed with so much more, including fully sortable player projections and a custom cheat sheet generator. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at rotoexperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Game Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does our team-by-team National Football League previews. We'll revisit our predictions before the season starts. Now, to be honest with you, it's a little foolhardy to be giving season win total predictions and season predictions before training camp has opened. And I know a lot of the fantasy guys are very, very excited for their fantasy rankings, and you're discussing where this guy is going to fit into an offense, and what about this guy, and what about this rookie. It's preposterous. I think fantasy rankings are irrelevant until we see the preseason. People are talking about Corey Davis. How the hell do you know what Corey Davis is going to do in a Titans offense? Corey Davis could blow his ACL in the first practice, all right? How's your ranking looking then, all right? You know, you've got to wait. You've got to let everything fall into place, which leads me into the team we're talking about today, the Dallas Cowboys, man. The Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? The Dallas Cowboys were a 13-3 football team last year by accident, okay? They were a 13-3 football team, not because they were smart. Listen, they wanted to draft Connor Cook. They were about to draft Connor Cook. They couldn't draft Connor Cook because the Raiders took Connor Cook one pick before they were about to take him. And then somebody in the room says, yeah, this Dak Prescott guy's all right. We'll take a flyer on him, whatever. It wasn't like Jerry Jones is like, we need this Dak Prescott kid. He's the next Cam Newton. He's going to lead our franchise to glory. He never heard of him. He's like, all right, whatever, man. Take Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott wasn't going to play. It was only because Tony Romo. It's only because Tony Romo, you know, ended up looking like this and then like this. That's why Dak was in. Get out of here, Tony. You're done. It's Dak time now, baby. It's Dak's time. All right, all kidding aside, though, it really did all happen by accident. It was actually organic. It's an amazing thing, too, because the Dallas Cowboys are always overhyped, and they never live up to the hype. Yet this is one of the instances this year in which they're actually being undervalued, in my opinion. Everybody keeps talking about this sophomore slump and, ooh, and Dak Prescott, and, ooh, he was kind of lucky last year. And, you know, Elliott. The only thing with Elliott, as long as Elliott doesn't, like, grope chicks and do something stupid, which is going to be hard for him not to do because he went to Ohio State, right? Ohio State players generally do stupid things. Generally, if you play for Urban Meyer, you're probably not the smartest guy in the world, but he's the hell of a running back. And now Dallas Cowboy fans are going to hate me, but hang in here. I think you're a good team. Cowboys, 9-1 to win the Super Bowl, plus 500 to win the NFC, plus 140 to win a division. The win total is 9.5. They were a 13-win team last year. They could have won more, and the games didn't mean anything at the end. They could have won more. I don't think they're going to regress that much. Nobody believed in Dak Prescott when he took over for Tony Romo, but I did. You know why I did? Because I'm a Mississippi State fan. I watch Mississippi State football, and I've been to Mississippi State football games. And I told people 2 years ago, I was the one that said, Dak Prescott is either going to be the next Cam Newton, and he's going to be a star in the NFL if he gets a chance, or he'll be like in the CFL or something. There'll be no in-between with this guy. But I liked Dak Prescott in college. You know why? His father died. And I know my father passed away, and it affected me big time, and I was a grown man when it happened. Happened to this kid when he was like 20 years old, man. He was the quarterback for Mississippi State. You know, he didn't even want to tell anybody. Like, he showed up, he didn't even say anything. The kid played through it. He showed a maturity level beyond his years. You don't have to worry about Dak Prescott doing anything stupid. He's a good kid. He's a smart guy, and he's the type of guy that you want leading your franchise, all right? And Dak Prescott's only going to get better as well. He's only going to get better. What I like about him the most is his actual poise. I love the poise, his calmness, his demeanor. I mean, what's there not to like? He completed 67.8% of his passes, 23 touchdown passes, only 4 interceptions. He ran for another 6 more. And the Cowboys were pretty conservative with him out of the gate as well. We're going to see him start to stretch the field a little bit more. He's not a great thrower. He was very accurate, but it was a lot of intermediate type of stuff. But what did we see against the Packers in the playoff game last year? When the Cowboys found themselves in an early 21-3 hole, Dak Prescott and the Cowboy offense, You know, they were able to move the ball in chunks. They were moving the ball down the field successfully. They just ran out of time. Dallas could have won that football game. I was very impressed. All right, so what's there not to like about Dak Prescott? What's there not to like about the best offensive line in football? Elliott, you know, he's like the cookie monster, man. He's always hungry. Feed me. He likes strippers, cookies, and running for yards. Just stay out of trouble, kid, and you might rush for 2,000 yards one of these days. Dez Bryant's numbers were down, but, you know, still a bona fide number one stud wide receiver. And you got to like Dez. Remember in the old days, man, he wanted to be punching people, and he was always flipping out. He's very poised right now and become a real leader. I think you're going to see Dez have bigger numbers this year. I think the Cowboys will throw the ball a little bit more. But Jason Garrett likes to control the clock. That's what they do. They even did that with Tony Romo. They like to play ball control and wear out your defense. Now, speaking of defenses, the defense was a little bit of an issue last year. The weak link was the secondary. They gave up 260 yards a game. They're ranked 26th. They made big changes. All right, Carr is gone. I like the draft picks that they brought in. Awuzie is going to be an instant impact player. Taco Charlton's going to help on the line. They're going to be able to move Lawrence to the left side of things right now. I love the Jordan Lewis kid out of Michigan. They might have some problems in the first month of the season. You might want to take a look at betting the overs in the Cowboy games. You know, Cowboys are playing the Giants in week one. There's probably going to be a lot of points there because the Cowboys secondary is a little raw, but they still have Scandrick, and they're hoping that Scandrick can take that next step up. As far as their special teams, Dan Bailey's one of the best kickers in the game, and he's a must take in fantasy. I don't believe in streaming kickers on a weekly basis. I think that having a guy like a Bailey or a Tucker can actually help win your league in the end. Garrett greatly improved as a coach. Garrett used to be like Jerry Jones's butler or something. He just happened to be, you know, coaching on the sidelines. I like that Garrett's starting to, you know, Garrett's starting to become a real coach. And I respect Jason Garrett's football ability as a coach. And I think they're destined to potentially get to a Super Bowl. Schedule's not easy. They've got a target on their back. They got to play the AFC West, the NFC West. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, everyone's like, oh, the Cowboys have to play the AFC West. Who aren't they better than in the AFC West? They're better than the Chargers. They're better than the Chiefs. I guess say they're even with the Chiefs or better than the Chiefs. The Broncos, I think the Broncos are sort of on the decline a little bit. And then you got the Raiders. The Raiders and the Cowboys are actually playing each other this year, which is going to be a sick game. They go to Denver in week two. That's going to be a tough one. They host the Packers again. They go to Atlanta. Their schedule is tricky. The win total is only 9.5. I don't see a four-game regression here. Even if the Cowboys have a little bit of difficulty out of the gate and their young secondary struggles a little bit, I don't think there's going to be that much of a regression. I think the Cowboys are going to have 9 wins going into the final 2 weeks of the season. The Giants are going to be right there with them. I'm not guaranteeing the Cowboys are going to win this division, but I am guaranteeing that the Cowboys are going to win more than 9.5 games, bet over 9.5 with the Pokes.
Many fantasy football players are focusing on their upcoming drafts later this summer. But the smart fantasy owner knows there's another big draft before the one where you pick the players. The first step in building a winner for the 2017 season is to draft the best team of experts for your preseason prep. So make the right selection and pick the squad at rotoexperts.com by purchasing the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. The Roto Experts roster features FSWA inaugural Hall of Famer and former Fantasy Football Writer of the Year Scott Engel, nationally acclaimed top ranker Jake Seeley, 2015 and 16 FSWA award winners Bobby McMahon and Brandon Murchison, and many more analysis with impressive stats. They bring you a draft package bursting with all-pro analysis and in-season coverage that'll guide you to title glory. So pick the team to help you build the right team. Make your first important selection of the 2017 season now and get the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package from rotoexperts.com. Be sure to enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for your discount.
All right, it's time for our plays of the day. Let's start off with some Friday night fight action. It's going to be a really fun fight, man. Justin Gaethje, this guy is 17-0. He's the World Series of Fighting champion, but this is a big step up in competition form against Michael Johnson. I'm going to go with UFC. It's like SEC, UFC. Yeah, you were the World Series of Fighting champion, but welcome to the big leagues, kid. We're going to go with Michael Johnson, minus 163, although Gaethje's a hell of a fighter, though. I like this fight to go over 1.5. Elias Theodoro, friend of the program, great guy. This is going to be the toughest fight of his life. But people underestimate Elias, and he continuously finds ways to win fights. I think he's going to find a way to win a fight again tonight. Aspen Ladd, Jessica I finds ways to lose fights. Give me Aspen Ladd, the young upstart. Give me the Bombers, plus the 3.5 against the Calgary Stampeders. Upset special. I like this game to go over the number. I think a teaser is in play here. Give me the Bombers plus the 10.5 and over. We're going to sweep the board tonight. We're going to get it done because we're the King of Kings. King of Kings, stupid zipper.